When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Thank you for downloading, streaming, and listening to the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is new every Thursday via podcastone.com and iTunes. It's always free, and we thank our great sponsors. Go to podcastone.com to find all the great sponsors of this podcast. Because of them, we can bring you the Eddie Trunk Podcast each week with limited ads at no cost to you. And remember, if you heard a sponsor that you want to try out or forgot a sponsor, want to see a list of them, access them by clicking the Killer Deals button at podcastone.com on the Eddie Trunk podcast page. When you go to podcastone.com, search my name and you'll find my podcast page. You'll see the Killer Deals menu. All of my sponsors are there. All the great promo deals. Buy through those links. It is greatly appreciated. Don't forget Amazon. We participate in the Amazon Associates program, and that is an affiliate advertising program. And it's designed to provide a means for me to earn fees by you linking to Amazon.com and affiliated sites through my page. So again, podcastone.com, the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Just search it. You'll see it come up. Find my page and click through all those links. We appreciate you doing so. So last week, we had a great conversation with the members of Styx. Hope you enjoyed that. A lot of good response to that. I mentioned on last week's podcast that I was going to get you that interview with Kevin Cronin of REO Speedwagon a few people were asking about, and I had one in the can, and we will indeed get that to you in the coming weeks. But I have something that I wanted to fast track this week because so many people enjoyed it. So many people wanted to hear it. And so many people asked me to post it. Those that heard it wanted to hear it again. And those that didn't hear it wanted to hear it for the first time. And what I'm talking about is my interview with Nico McBrain of Iron Maiden. Nico appeared in studio with me a week ago yesterday, last Wednesday, prior to Iron Maiden playing their show in Newark at the Prudential Center. As I've told you, most of the interviews you hear on the Eddie Trunk Podcast originate on my radio show, which is called Trunk Nation, and it's heard on Sirius XM 106 volume every day, Monday to Friday, live 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, replay 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, and on demand on the Sirius XM app. So for those of you with Sirius XM, please join me daily on 106. You'll hear these interviews live as they happen, and you can call in as you hear callers during these podcasts. That's where they're coming from. So join me each and every day for Trunk Nation on Sirius XM 106 volume, which is where these interviews, as I mentioned, originate from. Nico McBrain was a blast. I've had a big history with Nico over the years. He's done my show a lot of times. He's become a good friend over the years. He lives in Florida. When I go to South Florida, I've seen him and hung out with him at various shows, just hanging around. He's come to things I've done in Florida. Just a real good guy. without question, I think, and I don't mean this as a diss to anybody in Iron Maiden, but I think it's safe to say he is by far the biggest personality in Iron Maiden. Most of those guys are fairly quiet and reserved, and Nico is not. He's a big, loud, fun, boisterous guy with a great personality, and that's why he's so much fun to do interviews with. This is a real revealing interview. There's talk about potentially someday the end of Iron Maiden and how they'd want to end. Nico is suffering an injury on his arm. Iron Maiden currently out on tour playing as we speak, and you can hear him talk a little bit about the current tour that they're out there doing in the U.S. We talk about his alcohol problems. He is now sober and felt that he was at one point in his life an alcoholic and needed to stop drinking. Huge change for him because he was quite the partier as well. So there's a lot of real interesting stuff in this interview, including a hysterical story about Keith Moon throwing him out of the Who's dressing room. I mean, there's a wealth of great stuff in this, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it. And I got so many people saying, hey, we missed it when it aired on your radio show, so I wanted to fast-track this, especially with Iron Maiden currently being out on tour in the U.S., so you guys could hear it as fresh as possible. Again, hear this stuff live as it happens by joining me every day on Trunk Nation on Sirius XM 106 Volume. Once again, the show is live 2 to 4 Eastern, replays 9 to 11 Eastern, each and every day with weekend replays as well. So this interview is real long because originally Nico said he was only going to be on with me and be able to have about 20 minutes to be on with me because he had to get out to the venue because Iron Maiden played that night. But as you're about to hear, he stayed with me the entire show and did a nearly two-hour interview, most of which you will hear coming up in a matter of minutes. Later that night, I did go out to the Iron Maiden show in Newark, New Jersey, had a chance to see the band. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good set. Thought Bruce Dickinson sounded really, really good, especially given all that he's been through. Could have done with maybe one or two less new songs and one or two more classics, but I was really excited that they did things like Wrathchild, Children of the Damned, closing with Wasted Years, I thought was great. Power Slave, the song, was very cool. They did The Trooper. I'm fine with not hearing Run to the Hills. I thought it was a real good set. I really enjoyed it. Blood Brothers, one of my favorites, is one of the encores from the Brave New World record. So Maiden are out there for a bit longer. They're doing unbelievable business, as they always do, and you guys should absolutely check them out. The only thing I don't get and never did get about Iron Maiden is Yannick Gehr's dancing routine. I will never get it. I don't understand how it happens in a band like Iron Maiden. I'm sure he's a very nice man and a very talented man, but his stage performance is, I think, quite out of character and a little over the top for Iron Maiden, spinning the guitar and dancing and pirouetting and all that stuff. I don't even know how his guitar could be turned on in the mix with some of the things he does with it on stage, but it's been going on for years and they seem to be cool with it. So be it. Iron Maiden, one of the biggest bands globally still, and it's always good to have them on tour, always good to have them doing their thing. So you will hear from their drummer, Nico McBrain, in a funny, revealing, really good interview. A lot of fun. You're really going to enjoy this. All the Maiden fans around the world, get ready for nearly 2 hours with Nico coming up on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. Now, as usual, keep up with everything I have going on at Eddie Trunk on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And, of course, EddieTrunk.com is the official online home. Music news updated daily. Email me through the site. The Trunk Report, merch store, signed copies of my books. It's all for you on EddieTrunk.com. Let's get a quick break here. We'll get into it. A nice long interview with Nico coming up right after this.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, so when it comes to protecting the ones you love, I'm sure we can all agree nothing is more important than their safety. Your family, your kids, your pets, whatever. You absolutely want to ensure their safety. And Simply Safe helps protect your loved ones so you know that they are always safe. Each Simply Safe system is a secure arsenal expertly engineered to protect each access point to your home. You can set up the system yourself in under an hour. How cool is that? And you can save hundreds on installation fees by doing that. SimpliSafe is designed so that you can easily blanket your home in professional protection. 24/7 monitoring, that's just $14.99 a month with no hidden fees, no gotchas. That's it, $14.99 a month. No long-term contracts with SimpliSafe. They will never lock you in because they earn your business every single day. To find out why millions of Americans trust SimpliSafe to protect their loved ones, go to SimpliSafe.com. That's SimpliSafe.com/dad, D-A-D. SimpliSafe.com/dad now. If you order today, you'll get an extra 10% off, plus a free keychain remote and free shipping. Go now to SimpliSafe.com/dad.
The best in paranormal talk radio is here on Podcast One as part of the Jericho Network. Beyond the Darkness examines all aspects of the supernatural every day, Monday through Friday. And now, the same team behind Beyond the Darkness bring you the most frighteningly real-life dramas on True Crime Tuesday. Subscribe now by visiting DarknessRadio.com. Then, click the True Crime Tuesday banner. Again, that's True Crime Tuesday. Visit DarknessRadio.com and click the True Crime Tuesday banner. Subscribe now.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, here we go. Nico McBrain for nearly 2 hours. Just as Iron Maiden were about to kick off the third show of their current tour here in America in support of the Book of Souls. Enjoy, everybody. That happy belated birthday to you, man.
I've got my bus pass coming in the mail in a couple of weeks' time. Yeah, I can't believe I'm the age I am. I don't feel the age that I am.
Do you mind saying the age you are?
I'm 65. Gosh. I'm at retirement age. And, you know, I said to Harry the other week, do I get a gold watch? And he said, no. Okay. First of all, we're not retiring. So I suppose if I was, I might get a gold watch out of it.
Well, what do you got in? You're 65 years old, yeah. But you've got 33 years in Maiden?
Oh, no. More than that, man. 35.
You came in.
I joined in 82. What's that make it?
80. Oh, my gosh. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Do your math.
You should get a watch.
Did you leave school early or something?
That's why I do this. You should get a watch. 35.
Yeah.
You should get a watch with a little Eddie head
got
on
one
it.
At 25. Yeah. And, you know, Bruce has got these beautiful Ed Force One watches he worked on last year. And there was a limited run of them, I think 666. What? Hey, who'd have guessed that? You know, I don't know. He, and I thought at least I'd get one of those off of Bruce for like, hey, Nick, 30 plus years. No such luck.
Nothing.
It's hard enough trying to get a tour jacket out of this lot, you know?
Well, you've got those killer golf club bags. I know you gave our buddy Mike Piazza some of those clubs.
Yeah,
he loves those things.
Oh, yeah. But those were things that I got made for the band. I had some head covers made with Eddie on.
And yeah.
I had a golf bag made by a company called Belding. They went out of business years ago. So I've still got a couple of old ones in my garage. But
Still playing much? You still getting out on the course?
Not because of this,
mate. Yeah, I was going to ask you. You got a brace on your hand, which is...
Yes.
A brace on... Nico has a brace on his wrist and forearm, which is never a good thing to see for a drummer who has a gig tonight and just started a tour. So elaborate on that.
Okay, so here's the scoop. About 5 weeks before we went on... we started rehearsals. We went to Europe, as you know. Prior to the US tour, we did a 5 German shows and a full British tour, which we hadn't done a full British tour since 2010, 2011. So it was good to get back to that. But we rehearsed for about 3.5 weeks prior to the tour. Now, about 2 or 3 weeks prior to me leaving to come over to Europe, I went to Puerto Rico with my chum, Mitch, who you know.
Sure, Mitch,
is
sure.
My,
yeah.
my partner in the
restaurant. In the ribs.
In the rib shack, yeah. So we go over. So I'm out on the golf course, right? This is a golf injury, boys and girls, okay? Just so you know. So I'm out on the golf course. I've got 130 yards into the a gale off of the ocean into this par 5. I'm laying two. I'm thinking, right, I'll get a 7-iron. I'll choke down on a 7-iron and try and fly it in low, below the wind. And I chunked it, and I basically fired, my left hip turned, and I came down so hard, the ball popped in the water, which was 3 feet away from me. The divot went further than the golf ball. So I'm like, and I really felt it in my wrist, and I thought, oh, let's drop another one, do that again. But I did it again. If you know what I mean, I didn't want to do that again. I just wanted to reload the ball and get it on the green.
Right.
So I did exactly the same thing twice in a row. And the second time I went, oh, I think I've done something to my wrist. So anyway, we carried on the round. We played the next day. And then 2 days it started to really get sore. And I went to see a guy, a physio, a sports physio in Nashville. And he x-rayed it. And he said, it looks like you've pulled a ligament in your triangular tendon, which is on right below the wrist, whatnot. So anyway, I carried on, I iced it, I've got this brace on it, and I then had an MRI in London a couple of weeks ago, which confirmed I have a pulled ligament. So the guy said, you need rest. I said, oh yeah, that's a good one.
He says, I play an Iron Maiden.
Have you got any chance to sort of like not use it and play? No, definitely no golf, he said. Just rest it up, right? I said, well, I've got about 2 days before I do the first show.
Did he know who you were and what you did for a living?
After I told him, yeah.
Oh, he didn't know before.
And he just sat there and he went, oh. Okay, Dr. Cohen, his name was in London. Great guy. So what I do is I ice it pretty regularly, and I've got this max freeze I put on it before the show. And normally I'll get about two-thirds through the show, and then it starts to really get a bit sore. It doesn't. Fortunately, it doesn't seize up, which is great.
So it hasn't unhinged your playing.
Well, it has, because when it gets really sore, I can't. The boys and girls on the radio, if you had television, you'd be watching this. But
that show got cancelled. I used to have one of those. Yeah.
You did, didn't you?
That's why I do this now.
I was supposed to be on that.
Yeah,
with you
were.
Rod again. No, you're not bloody doing it. Anyway,
we had Steve on for an hour. Yeah, we had a great time with Steve.
Yeah,
I was like, Nick goes right in Florida. Let's get him up
come
here.
On for crying out
you
loud.
Know, real quick, I got to tell you, the last time you came on my radio show, Rod Smallwood, your manager and a friend of mine, sat with you.
We did.
And when I told people you were coming back on today, I saw a bunch of comments and they said the interview with Rod and Nico is among the greatest radio we ever heard in our life.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that was it. So, the risk scenario is I just have to change the way I'm now not using the wrist. I'm using more of my full arm, which then causes a problem with tennis elbow. So, maybe it has something to do with being 64.
I was just going to say, welcome to 65, Nick.
But it's okay. Some nights it's better than others, but we just fight through the pain, you know. This is what we got to do.
Do you or other guys in the band, and I know Bruce just went through a lot, and he was on with me when the album came out, when Book of Souls came out. We did an hour and a half.
Oh, yes, the night on September the 4th.
Yeah, we did it in Times Square. We actually did it with an audience at the Hard Rock.
I spoke with you, actually, from the restaurant, because we had a play, a special party in the restaurant.
Yes.
When we spoke on the phone.
Yes, you did your thing at the restaurant, and I had Bruce here at the Hard Rock. We did it just for the launch of the record.
Yeah.
But I want to touch on how Bruce is doing, but beyond Bruce's recent issues with cancer, are anybody in Maiden, do you guys have, because you it's a physical band, it's a heavy thing, you're playing drums, does a lot of guys, are there a lot of aches and pains? Do people have a lot of issues? I just went to see Metallica a couple weeks ago, right? And I'm sitting back in their dressing room and the guys come in and, you know, who's got a masseuse with them? Who's got a yoga teacher with them? They're in their early 50s. I said, God, what are you guys doing here?
A bunch of wusses.
Does everybody have little things after all these years?
Well, okay, first of all, we got Pete Lokrantz out with us. And Pete, you know, Big Pete, the Swede. Pete joined us in 85 as a massage therapist. When I had a split vertebrae in my back from a football match. It's a long story. I'll make it even longer. I met this guy through Thomas Johansson, who was our promoter, actually still EMA in Scandinavia, he's a big promoter out there. And he was his personal therapist. And I brought Pete in and said to Steve, we've got to take this guy on the road. I mean, we're playing football. We had our own, Iron Maiden FC. So Pete is still with us and he looks after Steve. Steve's got a very, I don't know the medical term for his, he's got vertebrae issues in his back. Now, I put it down to Steve Harris's, you know, that bass of his is an original Fender.
Heavy.
It must weigh 20 pounds at least.
And he moves around and runs around and jumps off the risers and foot on the monitor.
Yeah, I said, here, Harry, you know, your back issues ain't... He said, it's a football injuries, you know, from playing soccer. And I said, that's nothing to do with that. It's that Fender bass of yours hanging off your bloody shoulder, jumping 8 feet off the drum riser in the early days. You know, my drum riser was 5 or 6 feet up in the air.
Yeah.
And he'd leg it from the top. And I said, you only have to flat foot once, don't you? Anyway, so Pete looks after him. Bruce has a massage before the show, but we get people just... we pick them up as we go.
Right.
But here's the deal. In the old days, it used to be in, after the show, you go, what kind of drugs you got in your pocket? And somebody would say, oh, I've got a bit of hash or I've got something. You know, in the old days when people were doing sort of things we weren't supposed to. Now, it's like, what kind of drugs you got in your pocket? Well, I've got some ibuprofen. I've got anodine. I've got 500 milligrams of Dicalax. What do you fancy? You know? So,
what kind of cholesterol medicine are you on? Oh, I'm on Zocor.
you know, the great thing really is everybody's kept themselves fit, you know. I haven't drank. I've just celebrated 2 years of sobriety.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Good for you, man. Congrats.
Thank you. Nobody does drugs. Anymore. Well, they don't do any less. No.
Maven doesn't strike me as a band, unless you hit it well, that ever really did a lot of drugs. I mean, maybe a little stuff here and there. But you weren't Motley Crue or Ozzy or anything, right?
Well, we taught Motley Crue all day noon. in the early days, we're not all of us. There were only a few of us in the band. But, you know, Bruce is super fit. Steve runs God knows how many miles every day. He really looks after himself. Davey swims a lot. Adrian, I don't know what Adrian, he goes fishing a lot.
Yeah.
Now, that's maybe not, I mean, me, I was playing a lot of golf, so I'd do a lot of walking as well. And so we all try and we've all changed our diet as well.
And Yannick runs a lot in a circle on the stage. He probably puts in 10 miles in a circle during the show.
I think his guitar travels more than he does, actually.
Exactly.
So we really do know that. You know, and Yannick has always mentioned in interviews and in when we've been talking, and you know, because we know we're getting long in the tooth, as they say, right? Why do you keep looking at the clock?
I'm not.
Oh, yes, you are.
No, and I see somebody walking by the door.
Oh, okay. No, I'm just checking, boys and girls, all right?
No, anyway, there's people walking past the glass there.
All right. And Jan's always said, you know, we'll never become a parody of ourselves. And that's a really good, wise statement, because if we don't give it 150 million%, which is what Maiden's always done in a live show scenario.
Of course.
We probably wouldn't do it anymore.
So have you thought about that? Have you had that discussion? Because is there? Do you see an end date on Iron Maiden?
Absolutely not.
So it's not anything imminent?
No. You know, we're basically, the way we work, you know, we've got this, the main thing is the Book of Souls tour, the rest of the American tour, another 5 weeks of touring. Then we put this tour to bed. The Mayan, as Bruce says at the gigs, you know, we're going to send this one back to the jungle. We won't see this again. And then we'll talk about probably what we're going to do next. There's no plan, but that's always been the way. You know, sometimes Rod will come up and go, well, there's a 2-year, 3-year plan. This hasn't happened yet. But when no one's talking about, oh, you know, let's do a farewell tour, or let's you know,
right,
let's knock it on the head.
Right.
We all want it. We all still have this drive and the passion for the music and for playing on stage with one another. Notice I said playing on stage with one another, because if you don't say to you on stage, people get the wrong idea. For me personally, I've always said to Steve and the guys, you know, if I can't cut the mustard, and then I'll step down and let someone else take over, you know. But praise the Lord, I've still got my health, and, you know, I'm still doing what I do pretty well. Not like I used to. Plus, with the damaged wrist, that does make it a little bit of a hindrance. But I still love it, and the boys love it. The audiences love what we do, and...
I think the point you make about knowing when to say when,
yeah,
is really important, because I think there's a lot of bands that stay too long at the party and damage their legacy. And you go to see them, it's like, oh, geez, there's one, maybe one original guy there, and he's not as good as he used to be, and he can't sing like he used to be, and he can't move like, it's not the energy they used to have. I'd much rather see, I've said this many times, the bands that I love and respectfully than to go too long. One band that's done it is Rush. Rush did it a couple of years ago, and they said they were going to play this retrospective, and they didn't even play it as a farewell card. They said we're probably done touring. Neil doesn't want to tour anymore.
That's right, yeah.
And they kind of slowly went away. Now, Geddy and Alex may do some stuff again, but they realized that that was the time. So every band realizes it's their time. It's the bands that don't know their time and stay too long, and I think, to me, tarnish what you remembered them as if you'd stay too long.
I totally agree. Hello, what did you drop there, Sam?
That's the mouse for the keyboard.
I got to be honest that's how... Yeah, I feel like that as well. You know, you see these bands, you go, oh, maybe they should have just hung it up and left it hung up.
Right.
You know, for us, though, we just love what we do. And just being on the stage together doing, and yeah, we have so much fun. I mean, it's never a chore. And that as well, I think if it becomes, oh, gosh, I've got another tour to do, don't really feel like it, don't do it. You know, I mean, we know financially certain bands get together because they've been offered a fairly good deal to go back together, go out and do a 2 month, 3 month jaunt around the world.
Yeah.
And they can make some money. But for us, it's never been about that. Of course, we have sat and we've all been, you know, blessed with a great life and been able to have this longevity.
And an unbelievable global fan base.
Oh, exactly.
That is just any band would kill for.
Oh, my gosh. You know, you hear a lot of bands say, oh, we've got the best fans in the world. And I'm glad they feel that. But I know for sure, 100%, Iron Maiden have the best fans in the world.
Yeah, I would probably agree with you. Objective observer, you know, somebody who sees all bands, and honestly, I would probably agree with that. Globally, I've said this before, that any band would kill to have what you have. It doesn't matter about airplay. I'll never forget when, not this record, the previous record came out, I was talking to Rod, and I said, yeah, you know, I've been playing the record a lot on my radio shows, and he said to me, he goes, oh, fuck, man. I go, what? He goes, you're messing up our marketing plan. He said, nobody plays Iron Maiden on the radio. Would you stop that? He said, we don't want you to ruin our marketing. We never get played. I said, yeah, I know. But but to not to be able to have to kowtow to all of that. Like, you do interviews with the people you want to do interviews with. You don't have to force anything. You don't have to push anything. The fans are just there no matter what.
Yeah.
And it's a remarkable thing. We have to take a break. We'll come back. Sure. More with Nico McBrain coming up. We've got some people that would love to say
Certainly.
Hello to you.
Love
they
to,
will
yeah.
grab a few calls. Maiden is playing tonight. I'm going to finally see the show tonight.
Oh, good.
First time I'm catching it. I missed you guys
you
last time
ticket,
through.
Yeah.
What's that?
Did you buy a ticket?
Yeah, I did.
You
on
did?
The street.
Yeah.
The guy in the front. He said he's a friend of Nico's. He was selling tickets. He said Nick needs to pay for these doctor bills that he has now that he's 65. He's scalping his own tickets on 7th Avenue.
That's a good idea, actually.
There was a coach for a Super Bowl team in football a few years ago that got caught selling his allotment of Super Bowl tickets.
He didn't.
He had somebody selling him in the stadium. He got caught.
Oh,
Mike Tice. He was the coach of the Vikings.
Was he really?
Yeah.
What a cheeky bugger.
Yeah. Nico's gears are turning.
Oh, no.
You need me to stand out in front of the Prudential Center tonight?
Yeah. I'll come with you. I'll get an extra few bob.
Nico McBrain, I never heard of him. These are 75 each.
Try an autograph in 200.
See? Now you're thinking. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more with Nick.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Well, anybody that buys a car, you want to feel comfortable that you're getting fair price, right? I mean, everybody does. And to do that, you need pricing context. You need that information that empowers you to feel confident. And with TrueCar, you'll see what other people in your local market paid for the car you want. So that's about as empowering as it gets, right? And from there, you can connect with a local TrueCar certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want, and then TrueCar will show you what others in your area paid for the car you want. And now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. And there's that word again, confident. Once you register, you'll see real pricing on actual inventory. This is competitive pricing offered to you only by a True Car certified dealer for an actual vehicle on their lot. It's pricing you'll see before going to a dealership, so you can feel confident when you show up. With True Car, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing, so you can enjoy a quick, easy buying experience. An experience, by the way, that has True Car users saving an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Absolutely, you want to do that. Who doesn't love confidence? Some features, they're not available in all states. Be sure to visit True Car.
Here's an interesting fact for you. There are nearly 1 million new books published in the U.S. alone every year. 1 million. So if you like to read, how do you choose what you're going to read? Well, that's where Fully Booked by Kirkus Reviews comes in. You see, Kirkus has been one of the top book review publications for over 80 years. They do a deep dive on thousands of titles every year, including interviewing best-selling authors and telling you what might be the hot new release before everyone else knows. So figure out what your next read is going to be. Download Fully Booked right now on the Podcast One app, at Apple Podcasts, or at PodcastOne.com.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
It's great to have my good friend, Mr. Nickel McBrain of Iron Maiden, here in the studio, as Maiden are just getting started on the last and latest leg of the Book of Souls tour,
yes.
Doing a proper U.S. run, finally.
We are, yes. Good afternoon, boys and girls. Good evening, if you listen to it again. And online, poo-poo. yeah, mate, it's, yeah, we came over, I think last year we played maybe 7 shows. We took in a couple in Canada.
Yeah, you're always flying. You got here. The jet. You're yeah. 1 minute you're in Brazil, 1 minute you're in New York, like, 1 minute it's just like, you know.
I had no idea. It was like, where are we? What day is it?
I can't even imagine.
What time zone are we in? it was quite a brutal onslaught of the senses.
Yeah.
You know, people were saying, oh man, it must have been great having your own 747. Yes, it was great having our own 747, but it was no joyride, believe
me. You guys
me.
Have beds and stuff in
no,
there?
No.
Just regular seats? Do you get the exit row at least, Nico?
I had the exit row. Good. Yes, I did. Funnily enough, I was in the bubble and I had the exit row. I did. We had the seating configuration of that plane. It was originally an Air France 747, and it was just all business. There was no first class in it, and it was the old sort of seats that don't recline all the way. They're like, you know,
just angled,
dangle at the angle.
Yeah.
And there was no uncomfortable seat in the world. But yeah, we only did maybe 5 really long flights. But the great thing about doing it like as a charter, it wasn't a commercial, aeroplane
right.
As such, it was our chartered flight. We could fly from LA. When we went from LA to Japan, we went during the day. Now most flights intercontinental, transatlantic, are overnight either if they're
right, because they want the time difference,
yeah.
So you wake up there,
yeah,
the next
exactly.
morning, right.
So we were fortunate in that respect that we could fly during the day. We'd leave at 2
when you wanted to,
yeah, leave at 2 and fly for 12 hours and do what you did when you got there. But yeah, so that part of the Book of Souls last year, I think we did about 7 cities in America, maybe a few more, a couple of double ups. So we decided, excuse me, because we hadn't done a full American tour for a number of years,
right.
Plus the British tour that we hadn't done in 6-7 years. It would be nice to top this off with an actual full American tour, which I think we've done 3 shows already. And at is it PNC tonight?
Tonight's Prudential Center.
That's Charlotte, isn't it, Pam?
PNC is in New Jersey, but that's the outdoor amphitheater.
Oh, where are we playing tonight?
Prudential Center, which is in Newark.
It's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think you guys have ever played there before. It's a newer
it's
arena.
A newer venue,
yeah,
isn't
maybe.
It?
Well, not that. Yeah, but I don't think you've ever played it. It's literally from here, 7-10 miles through
the
tunnel.
Oh, that
takes
2 hours to get there, then.
Well, depending upon the time, yeah. But it's very close. It's right by the airport.
Yeah.
And it's a newer arena. I don't know if you guys have ever been in there before, but I know the fans here in the U.S. are very excited that you guys are finally doing a tour,
yeah,
where you're doing a run of dates and
mm-hmm.
a string of dates. And a couple quick more things from me before I let a few callers get on here. How is Bruce? Because one of the things that I think is great, and I'm taking this as a very positive sign, because when the album came out, I did an hour and a half with Bruce here, and we had a great conversation. And at that point, he didn't know how he was going to hold up. He didn't know how he would react to being on the road with the treatment and the cancer and everything he went through. And I got to tell you, what's been encouraging to me is since you guys have been out on tour for Book of Souls, there hasn't been... it's like a non-factor. It's like it never even happened.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that's a good thing.
Oh, with absolutely, Eddie. So he obviously through the treatment he had, his main concern was saliva glands. He kind of lost a lot of the function in percentile of his. So
his mouth was getting dry.
He was worried about, dry mouth. So what we did was to overcome that. We've got certain areas on the stage that are disguised where he's got water bottles in them.
Water bowls?
Water bottles. So he can have a quick, hydrate his mouth. And, but what happened was the more he started singing, the more he could deal with that. And to be very honest with you, I think his singing is stronger now than it's ever been. I mean, that album, the vocals he put on Book of Souls were just frighteningly good. And that was with a golf ball-sized tumor on the back of his tongue. Okay, so after all this not wonderful treatment, it's the worst thing in the world to have that chemo and radiology and stuff. And the thing that amazed me about Bruce was that he bounced back so quickly. I mean, the doctor said first week of May he went to see his oncologist and they were going to say how he was doing and was it in relapse or was it in remission. And they got the good news. But they said now the problem with your body is it's going to be fighting all the stuff that has been going on with it for the last 2 or 3 months.
Right, so, it's been poisoned, basically.
So, but the doc said a year. Bruce has gone, no, I'll be done. We'll be ready at the end of to start rehearsals in January.
Right.
So he came back after 7 months of just relaxing and taking it easy and doing what he do. He's went on supplements and stuff like that, and he's really looked after himself. He really studied it, and he's come back. And I never forget, the first show was at Fort Lauderdale. I think it was the 24th of February last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he's up above. If anyone hasn't seen the show, I'm going to give it away. There's a cauldron bubbling, and he's behind it, and he sings, "Here is the soul of a man." Excuse me, I know, I'm the drummer, all right? Behave yourself.
They don't put a mic back there when they go.
No. So I'm sitting ready to go on stage underneath where he's right above me.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I noticed when he sang was the power with which he sang. I'm hearing him, au naturel. I've got my monitors on, but they're not loud for that part. You know, I mean, I'm not sitting in front of them, so I'm not really hearing them.
Right.
And every night I sit there, I get a tingle in my back, down the spine vibe.
Sure.
And when I hear him, because I'm actually right underneath him, and he just belts it out. And sometimes he runs out of steam, but then you look at the way he runs around the stage.
Yeah.
You know, some nights he'll sing off mic a little bit. And we've had a few people say, we couldn't hear his vocals on that particular song or something. But he's pacing himself. So some nights you might find that. But he is just stunningly – he's my hero. He's 75% of the reason I gave up drinking.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I was sitting on a plane coming back from Tampa in March 2 years ago. And Memorial Day weekend, I did this function over in Tampa, and I was on the lash for 4 days solid, and I didn't remember stuff. And I said to Mitch, "What happened last night?" He said, "Don't you remember? We got up and played with the Highway to Hell," and I went, "The band." I went, "Yeah. What did we do? Did Trooper? Yeah. Oh, I don't remember it." So, and then I was just. I had this epiphany hit me, and I thought, here I am, killing myself. I was only drinking beer and wine, but a lot of it. And I said, I thought to myself, here I am, killing myself. My brother has just fought throat cancer, and he's won that battle, which could have taken him.
Mm-hmm.
And here's me doing it to myself, and I thought, crying out loud, you know, there's that man's a hero to me, and it inspired me. That I remember sitting in, so I turned to Mitch and I said, Bruce has just fought cancer, and look at the state I'm in. I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to do a 30-day cleanse. And it went from there. So I wasn't entirely giving it up forever. I just thought I would stop for 30 days. I got to 30 days, and I didn't feel much better. And I thought, I'll do another 30 days. But it was really primarily Bruce's illness that gave me that inspiration.
So did you go through any sort of, recovery? Did you feel you were an alcoholic in any way, or you just literally?
I think
you
so.
Think you were,
yeah.
But you didn't go through any program. You just you yourself just.
I
went,
just stopped.
That's
I went
it.
And asked me, I'm done.
Was it tough?
The first couple of weeks, yeah. I mean,
because you're a guy. The other thing too, when people see you, and I've hung with you in Florida, and we've hung out sometimes. I mean, you're the life of the party. Everybody says, "Hey, Nick, you know, let's have a drink." You know, you are. Yeah. I mean, you're that guy. Yeah. You're the big, outspoken personality in Iron Maiden.
Yeah, that's
so.
True.
That's that kind of comes with that territory. Let's have one.
I try to be like that, but without joining in the booze. But the worst thing about that, when you don't drink and you see everybody else getting razzed up, is they make a complete prat of themselves. And I think to myself, that's what I used to do. I used to be like that. But no, he really did inspire me to cut out and to quit.
That's amazing,
to
man.
To quit drinking.
Were you ever, did you ever feel, were you ever drunk on stage?
No.
And you felt it impaired your playing?
The only time we actually drank on stage as a band, we used to traditionally drink a pint of Guinness on the encores when we played Dublin. We didn't do that this year, but that was one time where you'd see us having a drink. We had a tour back in 84 when Coney Hatch were opening for us.
I saw that show in Fastway.
In Fastway. And Coney Hatch, it was their last show, and I think it might have possibly been St. Louis. I'm not sure. And it was... I forget the bass player's name.
Andy Curran.
Andy Curran, yeah, dear Andy. It was his birthday, or one of the guys in the band. And we bought him a bunch of champagne. And this was the days we were doing sound checks, right? So we're at the venue, 4 p.m, go into their dressing room. It's like 6 p.m. Out comes the champagne. All the corks getting popped. Oh, lads, you fancy, have a celebrating. Oh, we'll just have one then. So we ended up getting absolutely pie-faced before Coney Hatch went on stage. So when we took the stage, we were all drunk. And I remember we did Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner in those days.
14 minutes.
We put two parasols, a garden table and two or three chairs, and me, Dave and Adrian went up and had a glass of wine while Steve was doing a doom-doom-doom-doom. And we were making mistakes everywhere, just laughing at one another. And I remember I looked at the audience, and there were all these people at the front. Usually they've got their hands up giving it all the big and right. And these guys are just like this complete look of disdain on their face going, what the fuck is that? So that was the only time we've ever been drunk on stage in our entire career.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, I'm happy for you, man.
Thanks, mate.
That's quite an accomplishment to be able to just do that and recognize that and have. Does Bruce know he was the catalyst for
without
that?
Without doubt, yes.
You've
yes.
talked to him about
it? I do. And I love all my brothers dearly. And I am so amazingly proud of how Bruce has dealt with the adversity of what he went through. And it wasn't easy for his family, and especially himself, when that chemo kicked in. We were also, I think this is one of the reasons why we are the way we are today, after having a close call of losing one of your brothers. And knowing that maybe that would have been it for the musical side, but that aside, that's really pretty irrelevant. Just to lose your brother and somebody you dearly love is bad enough.
Yeah.
But it kind of gave us a lease of life. I think you question your own mortality when someone's so close to you, and we've all been touched. I think everyone that's listening, more than likely, by someone in their family or a friend that's been touched by the big C. And had to deal with that, and so it's given us that. I think it's given us an extra drive of motivation, perhaps.
Yeah. No, I have a extremely close friend of mine that's literally in the hospital right now battling leukemia, and I've had family members have it. So yeah, it's a big wake up call. And again, it's something that comes with getting older. You just mentioned, you know, you're 65 now, so it's time to take a little better care of yourself and all that sort of stuff. Before I go to the calls, one last thing for me. A lot is always made when Iron Maiden tours about the set list.
Yeah.
Because you've got 40 years of music to pull from.
Yeah.
And everybody's got their favorite eras and periods, and then there's songs you have to do, and then there's songs you don't want to do. And when you have a new record out, as you do now with the Book of Souls, there's going to be a good amount of new material that's always played live. Tell me about when you go out on a tour, the conversations to make the set list. Is it one guy that says, this is what we're doing? Is it a committee? How do you arrive at what you play?
It's a good question.
You're fighting? Is that really how you hurt your wrist?
No. Absolutely. Listen, I think I can count on one hand, not the one which got the... we've probably had, in my career with Maiden, I've probably had four fights. Not physical fights, but arguments with Steve.
Yeah.
it's been so funny. We don't fight. The sort of thing that everybody in this band has, if anyone has any violence tendencies to each other, then it's not going to work. You know. So we just there for the love of one another, making the music that we do.
So who makes the set list, though? Who's the final, gives it the final stamp?
Going to that. Usually what happens is Steve... Bruce is pretty primary in coming up with the set lists. He comes up, and what will happen, him and Steve will talk about the next, like, say, the Book of Souls tour, what we would play off the album, what older songs we'll play. Rod has a good input on that as well. Oh, no, I think we should do them. Let's do Run to the Bloody Hills again. No, we're not doing that. Oh, why not? So that's the kind of arguments you have. And the primary is Steve, Bruce, and Rod. And then when we're going into rehearsals, we'll get the set list because we have to relearn some of the songs, especially when you know what the new songs are going to be played. You have to go and learn your parts again because, as you know, we had quite a break between making the album and then touring with it.
Right.
So what then happens is if there's any one of us has a particular idea of a song we'd like to play, we'll phone each other up or phone Steve and Bruce and we'll say, hey, how about doing so-and-so-and-so-and-so? And it's never set in stone till we go into a rehearsal room. And we then may change out songs. And that's how it happens. It's kind of democratic. But at the end of the day, Stephen really would be the primary. He'll go, right, no, we're doing this. Okay. You don't argue with Harry. Harry's the boss.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think everybody knows that.
Yeah, but it's very respectful. If somebody has an idea of a song, sometimes, you know, we'll forget a tune. You know, when I say forget a song, you know, in amongst all the ethos of putting the set list together, someone might go, yeah, let's do Can I Play With Madness. Everyone goes, yes, what a great idea. What we're going to take out instead of, you know, we don't want to do too many songs, you know, because it takes the time of the set list over your allotted time on stage.
Right.
So, you know, something like that could happen where somebody will pull a song out of the air and go, you know, somebody suggested Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner.
We've got four songs.
We got Red and the Black and the Book of Souls. You sure you want to put Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner? Well, while we're at it, let's do Empire of the Clouds, and we'll only do five songs. You know?
I asked Bruce about when Book of Souls came out. I asked him about that song. He said it will never be played live ever. There's been talk.
Well, no. I've mentioned to Bruce that not maybe as such with Maid. Well, yeah. I mean, you remember John Lord did that piece with the London Philharmonic years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you're going to do it live, it would be a one-off in an event. I would like to do it with a full orchestra and whoever in the band would like to play it, you know, which would ideally be all six of us, right?
And go out and do
an orchestral night.
Yeah.
Not just the Book of Souls, Empire of the Clouds, but maybe I'd love to do Alexander the Great with an orchestra. just because we've never played it live.
What about Blood Brothers with an orchestra?
Oh,
that would be killer,
yeah,
right?
Get rid of that stupid synthesizer. Yeah. So it's not beyond the realms of a possibility of doing something like that. But it might not be it might not per se be an Iron Maiden tour.
Right, a special event.
I'd love to do something like that.
Is there a song in your history of being an Iron Maiden that you fought for to get in the set and the one that you really said, we got to do this one, the one you went to bat the hardest for?
No, not really, no. The one I didn't want to play was Where Eagles Dare when I first joined the band, because I said, Harry, so we're going to open with that. And I said, you what? He said, we're going to open with it. I said, you're having a laugh. I said, he said, we've got to show the new boy off. Right.
Well, I mean, that's so, the first song on the first record
exactly,
you made with the band, and it's such a great opening. We played it earlier when Alex played that drum lick that opens it. So.
Yeah, I don't think there was, I can't recall one that I went to bat for. No. 22 Acacia Avenue.
That's one you'd like to go to bat for?
Yeah, I think I'd like to do that. And Stranger in a Strange Land. I really love that song. You know, so many, as you say. You know, so going back to that set list scenario, you know, how do we get from A to B? It's Steve, Bruce and Rod primarily set that the blueprint for it, and then we might amend it as we go.
You've got this band Ghost opening for you.
Yeah.
What do you make of those guys? You must have seen them without their costumes on, right?
Yeah.
You know who they are?
Yeah.
Do you know who's in the band and who's not?
Absolutely not.
So you could be walking by. It could be a catering
guy. It could be anybody, you know. But I haven't got a chance to go out and see them. They've been with us on various shows over the years.
They may have.
I know the front geezer.
Yeah, there's the main guy.
The main guy.
Right.
I mean, it's you know, you can't get away from that voice. You know, it's him. But the other guys, well, I'm not sure. But they're
very
really
clandestine.
Lovely. They're all clandestine. Yeah, and they were at one time all Swedish. I do remember that. They were
you mean they're
Swedish.
Not Swedish anymore?
I don't know.
Oh, that's right, because the main guy, that's what's he changes guys
think,
and you don't
I
even
think,
know who it is.
Yeah, you know, it could be Fred the Butcher down the street, you know, as long as he gets the songs right. They're great. It's good to have them out.
Interesting band, interesting concept, and they're definitely an emerging band. People really like them, and I just find I've seen them once, and it's interesting because you would think the look and the image they have that they would be this really aggressive metal band.
Yeah.
But they're actually quite melodic.
It's very melodic.
Yeah.
Lots of harmony stuff going. Anyway.
All right. So let's get some calls on for Nico, because I know the audience is rabid to talk to you and loves talking to Iron Maiden and loves talking to Nico McBrain. So we're going to give you that opportunity right now. Let's start North Carolina. John in North Carolina. John, you've been waiting over an hour to say hello to Nico McBrain. So go ahead.
I'm kind of dumbfounded that I'm actually on the air right now. But I'm very excited. I'm taking my son to his first concert in Charlotte to see you all.
Lovely.
And I can't wait to see his eyes turn into saucers as you all come on stage.
Oh, bless you.
Extremely excited. I've seen you multiple times. And so I can't wait to see the look on his face. But anyway, I know other callers want to get into.
No problem. How old's your boy, John?
He's going to be 14. He's going to be 14.
14? He's just to his 14 to see his first gig.
Well, here's the thing. I wanted this to be a big one for him, and I live in Wilmington, North Carolina, and we're driving over 4.5 hours to Charlotte.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Nico will send the plane. He's sending Bruce with the plane. He'll come pick you up.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Oh, bless you.
Your son will really have a great first show.
Yeah.
The singer's going to...
Well, he's going to have a great first show anyway.
Oh, that's brilliant.
I've already kind of kicked him up for it. So,
what's your question, John?
What is the most difficult song for you to play live?
Currently, Power Slave.
Why is that? Because of your injury?
No, it's the Power Slave. Funny enough, for the drum track, it's there's a lot of different time issues in it. You know, there's the drum intro, which is. If I don't see my drums, I tend to miss them. So I have to be lit when I do the intro. That's another thing about getting older. The old peepers go first.
Yeah, I know.
So then you've got the actual groove. There's this. It's just a little complicated. With there's a backbeat on the rhythm on the verses. Then when it breaks down in the solo, there's quite a few different. And then there's like a middle eight section before it kicks into the up tempo solos. And then coming back out of the solos, it has to rail down in time to get back to the meter of the verses. And sometimes that. It just getting that right is a little shady, and it's one of the hardest songs for me to play, funny enough.
Thank you for the call, and I hope your son enjoys the show. Yeah, I took my son to his first metal show a few weeks ago. I took him to Metallica. Uh-huh. He's 9.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, the guys were so nice to me, and Lars gave him his sticks after he played Enter Sandman and cool. Put him in the front row and all this stuff. I said to my son when we were driving home, I said, don't get used to that, because when daddy's retired, you'll be on StubHub like everybody else buying tickets.
Or outside.
Or outside. Where, yeah. I said, you ain't going to be sitting having a tea with Lars and having him hand you drumsticks, brilliant. Pal. Get used to that. Let's talk to Harvey, who's in Winnipeg, Canada. Hey, Harvey.
Hey, Eddie. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Your phone's really scratchy, Harvey, so get your question out real quick.
Yeah, Eagle, I just wanted to say I love everything you do. I've been to your restaurant. I've seen you 7 times, and have a great show, and I love you.
Thank you, Harvey.
All right, Harvey, I'm sorry to be brief, but your phone was super scratchy. He mentions your restaurant,
he did, yeah.
And which is a great spot. How's it doing there in Florida?
Absolutely top form. We've got it right now. I mean, it's we're going into our 8th year. We celebrated our 7th anniversary.
Rock and Roll Ribs.
Yeah, Rock and Roll Ribs, Coral Springs. We've got it's just sitting where it's supposed to be. We've got great staff. We've got great management now. We've got
importantly, great food.
The food, yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. It really is top form. And, I mean, it's a great ambience in there, and people love it. And it's not just metal fans that come in.
No.
You know, we get dribs and drabs of you know, people with Maiden shirts or, you know, Dio shirts or UFO or, you know, some metalheads coming in. But it's a family restaurant. It's great. We've got marvelous staff. And,
And when you're not on tour, you're walking around and you're saying hello to people. And I was in there a couple of times when you were there.
Yeah.
And you're 100% right. There's older people who have no idea about this music or anything. And they'll come in and just for a great meal, and you'll go and say hi. And you're just like any other guy that runs a restaurant.
That's great. Yeah.
It's very cool.
So come on down, boys and girls. You never know. I might be in there.
Let's say hi to Steve, who's in Michigan. Hey, Steve, you're on with Nico McBrain. Hey, Steve. Steve's got his radio up, so he's hearing us back, so we'll come back to him. Uh-huh. Harley in Oklahoma. Go ahead, Harley.
Yeah, Eddie, how you doing, buddy? I was on a hold, and, man, I don't know what I was listening to, but I'm glad I got you. And how you doing, Nico?
Oh, is our hold might be a different channel. It's throwing
they're,
people.
They're working on it right now.
Yeah,
okay.
Hello, mate.
Right, sorry about that. Me? We're having some phone issues, Harley. Thank you.
How are you, Harley? What are you doing? Hey.
Oh, I'm working right now, Nico. I'm delivering to Walmart some produce.
Okay. Get me some wheatgrass.
Okay, you want some wheatgrass? I'll have to.
Oh, yeah, man.
Take me about,
what's your question for me?
I just wanted to know what your favorite song was off the new album.
What's the what?
What's your favorite song on the new album,
the
Harley
favorite
wants to
know? Oh, that is a good question. That's a good question. Oh, favorite song. Oh, blimey, they're all great. I think it's got to be the title track. That track live for me is primarily my favorite, because when I play that live, the intro, once we get going on it, it's like I tip my hat to a Bonham, a little bit Cashmere kind of groove with the bass drum and snare and the offbeat China. So I kind of... Still kind of hit the kit too hard when I get to that bit, because it's just a thing that I had when I heard it. I thought, well, that's very Bonhamish, and I kind of patted myself on the back, so I'm kind of proud of that. And then the solo section, when we break down and go into the whole solo, which is really quite fast, but the fast section of the song, and the solos, Adrian's guitar solos in that, and Davey's are just off the chart. So yeah, Book of Souls, mate.
Tim in Texas. Hey, Tim, you're on with Nico McBrain.
Hey, Eddie, thanks for taking the call. Nico, I'm going to see you guys for the 18th time in Texas.
You should get a watch. Nico didn't get one for 35. Maybe you'll get one for 18
That's
shows.
Brilliant. Good one,
I'm
Tim.
I'm going to the 18th show on the Friday, the 23rd, here in Dallas, and I got a quick question for you. I've been a fan since the beginning of time. What do a couple of fat fellas got to do to get backstage to get this age-old Rothschild single sign from Japan that I've been carting around for
Well, I don't know.
What kind of single is it?
It's from Japan. I got a white label promo, and I've been carrying it around since, oh, God, since I was 12. So I've taken it to every show I've been to, and I just can't seem to, you know, I try to wear sexy stuff.
Hey, have a sexy bird on each arm. That'll get you in, mate, tell you.
You know, I didn't know if it was short shorts or a code word or anything like that.
Well, I got to be honest with you. We don't do... we're kind of old-fashioned. We don't do meet and greets.
You guys don't do the whole meet and greet.
No,
bit,
we don't
right?
do meet and greets.
You don't do the whole...
We certainly don't do... I mean, we have a VIP trooper thing, but that's something that's totally separate from the band in terms of the VIP side of it at the venues. But we don't do meet and greets. We used to. We're kind of boring old farts. We just get to the venue around 7, 7.30. Some of the guys turn up about 8.
Really close to the when you go on, actually. Yeah,
yeah. And then when we finish the show, maybe 80% of the band do what's called a runner, and they head off back to various hotels, you know, because sometimes we don't all stay at the same hotel. No reason that because we love one another, but, you know.
Yeah, everybody has their preferences.
I've asked myself, wonder why that is. I mean, there's 3 different hotels in New York, for instance. You know, so,
you guys are at 3 different hotels here in the city?
Yeah, I don't know whether it's because one was full up and we had to. No, people have preferences. You know, somebody will go, oh, well, I prefer to stay at that hotel. I don't want to stay where you want to go. We have that luxury now where we can afford to do that. So,
and when you say you do a runner, I was just at a show, I forget where it was, and I had hosted the show, and I was standing on the side of the stage, and the band came off, and there was maybe 3 to 4 minutes of just the lights stayed down and some sound effect in the crowd and all that. And a friend of mine who was there with me, he said, he goes, well, this is really going on kind of long. Are they going to come back out? I go, nope. They're in their cars. They're in already in the hotel. When they're clear of the traffic, that's when the house lights come on and the feedback stops.
Everybody's out.
Yeah. So that's the old Elvis has left the building.
Exactly. I mean, the thing is that sometimes if we've got a flight to make, say we're flying to another city after the show, everybody will do a runner. 9 times out of 10 on this tour, Bruce and I stay back because I like to have a bit of protein after the show and fresh juice and stuff and have a shower. And usually I'm there for an hour and the traffic's died down relatively speaking, you know. So the main reason is if you're going to go and catch an aeroplane to the next city or something like that, and if you've got a long drive over, you know, 50, 60 miles to wherever you're going.
Right.
So then we do runners. And that basically means you get off, I get off, I take my shirt off, I take my, okay, girls, I take my tights off, all right? Yeah, I've seen you on the website, you lot. Ooh, Nico's got those tights on. Yeah, they're not tights, they're bicycle pants, you know, come on.
People giving you shit about wearing those?
Yeah, man, I mean, come on, you know. I just wondered if they're jealous.
Yeah,
you know, like thinking like these nice legs in those.
Yeah,
whatever.
I think that's it.
So I whip them off.
You're onto it.
So I've got no skivvies on, girls. I play au naturel under that, you see. So I take that out, put my robe on, jump in the car, and then when I get to the hotel, I get out of the car, go and have a shower.
And so you're riding in the hotel in nothing but a robe.
Exactly.
See, you are a sexy man.
Exactly.
I'm telling you, man.
I'll learn it all flow free, mate.
Nico McBrain is bringing sexy back to Iron Maiden, baby.
Yeah, man. We're not boring old farts like everybody thinks.
I'm on for like another 35 minutes. Are you good on time?
Man, yeah, I'm
fine. Oh, this is beautiful. Yeah. Great. All right. Having a great Wednesday hanging out with Nico McBrain, talking Iron Maiden. More of your calls, more Maiden talk coming right back.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, have you heard the news? Alone is back with a crazy new twist, and being together never felt so alone. Yep, the fourth season of Alone is back, but this time the rules have changed. 10 hardcore survivalists will still be dropped into the unforgiving wilderness, but that's where the similarities with previous seasons end. These 10 participants are comprised of 5 competing teams, brothers, fathers, and sons, and a married couple who all have unbreakable bonds. And the competitors, well, they're going to be split apart and dropped off as individuals equipped with their 10 items, 5 each. In order to win the game, they must mobilize, find each other, and survive on the island together longer than the other competing pairs. Extreme conditions, perseverance, resilience, self-reliance. These are all some of the qualities that go into making Alone so special. It really is an unbelievable show, riveting, on your seat, shocking, innovative. You do not want to miss it. For the new season of History's Alone, it is premiering on June 15th, and it really is absolutely amazing. Check it out. You got to see this show. And you can see, listeners, all of you guys listening here on the Eddie Trunk Podcast, we encourage you to tune in and check out Alone, all new episodes Thursdays, 10, 9 Central on History.
There's a whole lot of good things happening on the Podcast One Forbes network. Forbes U30 is a show about young innovators, disruptors, and entrepreneurs like the minimalists Joshua and Ryan, electropop artists like Lights, CBS Search Party star Charles Rogers, the women of YouTube's Clever TV,
plus many more.
And the Forbes interview is a deep dive into the minds of the folks who could be on the cover of the magazine, like Tinder founder Sean Rad, hero pilot Captain Sully Sullenberg, Moneyball author Michael Lewis, pop star Jason Derulo,
and the list goes on and on.
Subscribe or listen to Forbes U30 and the Forbes interview now on the Podcast One app, Apple Podcasts, or PodcastOne.com.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
We'll continue letting you guys talk to Nico McBrain as we talk Iron Maiden on this Wednesday. And again, the Iron Maiden tour is underway here in America. A couple dates already down, playing tonight in Newark, New Jersey. They go out through, wraps up in, is Brooklyn in September?
Yeah. No, July 21st and 22nd.
Okay. So you've got those will be the last two shows of the tour.
Yeah.
So it comes back, you kind of start here on the East Coast and you end back here on the East Coast.
We do, yeah.
But over the course of the next month or so, Maiden will be out there all over America. So go to ironmaiden.com for more information. And I think you're doing Canada too, right?
Yeah, Quebec and Toronto.
So we're on in Canada as well. So you guys in Canada looking for Iron Maiden, there's your dates. And good luck getting a ticket and getting in there and going to see the guys. Let's get a few more people on. This is Steve, who's in Michigan. He wants to talk to Nico McBrain. You're on the air, Steve.
Hey, Nico, what's up?
Hey, Steve. I'm good, mate. How are you?
Good. I'm a drummer, and you've been a huge influence on my playing when I first started out and even today as I'm still playing.
Thank you
awesome
so much.
Drummer.
Lovely.
Awesome
thank
drummer.
You.
You're welcome. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
The premier Sonar thing, how did that come about of you going back to Sonar? And by the way, your new kit is awesome.
He's wearing a Sonar T-shirt, as
yes,
a matter of fact.
Yes, I have my Sonar T-shirt on. Oh, gosh. All right. I'll make a long story even longer. This story is enough to make a glass eye cry, believe me. Okay, real quick. I know we've got lots of people, so I'll just try and make it short. Premier, okay. Basically, in a nutshell, Premier UK decided to stop making British-made drums. It was a bit of a sad day when I spoke with Ken Tonkin, who's the owner, a few years ago, and I said, okay, in that case, I can't carry on with the company because I was using the hand-built drum set made in England. They let go of their staff, a guy called Keith Keogh, K-E-O-G-H. He was the main master drum builder for Premier. He's now making the British drum company, making drums for himself. So that left me basically without a drum company for the upcoming tour. So I thought, well, whom would I like to go and use? Because obviously I could take my pick. You know, it's very, very nice and a great blessing to be able to say, you know, phone someone up and go, I'd like to use your drum set. What kind of deal can we do? So I had 19 great years with Sonar before 22 years with Premier. So I went back to Sonar and we sat down and discussed the current drum set for the tour. Lots of umming and ahhing because it's quite a unique ask to have a gold gold drum set, such as the beautiful SQ2 that I'm using now. They're 9-ply beechwood shells, all square sizes, as you probably know, as you're a bit of a fan. And Sona and I had a wonderful chat and decided that we'd work together again, and that's how that happened.
There you go. There's the story behind it. Let's go to Utah right now and say hello to Brian. Hey, Brian, you're on Trunk Nation with Nicko McBrain.
Oh, amazing. Love you guys. Nicko,
hey,
been
mate.
A fan since the very beginning.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. What I really want to know is how close you were, and sorry to distract, to the old drummer.
No problem.
Clive Burr is my inspiration
yes,
to playing
sir.
The drums.
Well, Clive amazing. And I, yeah, Clive was a very, very, very close friend of mine, as were all of the band. We first met in Belgium, funny enough, which was on Iron Maiden's very first European show. And I was working in a band called McKitty, which was a three-piece. Uh-huh. And Charlie Toomer, I was on bass, Donovan McKitty on guitar, and myself. And we were on the same bill with Maiden, supposedly supporting Nazareth. Anyway, that's another story. So I met them there. It was the first time I met them. Then I went on tour, on the Killers tour, when Trust supported Maiden. And Clive and I became really, really, really very close, as I did with the rest of the band, which then stood me in good stead for becoming the replacement when things didn't go so well for Clive.
There you go. Thank you, Brian, for the call. Much appreciated.
Awesome.
Thanks, mate.
Can't wait to see you in Salt Lake.
Oh, looking forward to it, bro.
Thank you, man. And, you know, a lot of times when I've talked to you about some of your favorite Iron Maiden songs to play live over the years, a lot of times you'll reference stuff that you actually didn't play on originally.
Exactly.
I've heard you mention stuff from the first three records.
Yeah. I mean, 22, Prisoner, all those great songs.
Yeah.
I mean, Clive's drumming was amazing, and we had a great affiliation together. You know, we had a drummer's affinity, if you like.
After you joined the band and replaced him, did you stay in touch? Did that get a little weird?
That was a little weird.
Yeah.
He wouldn't talk. He didn't actually talk to me for about three or four years.
Because you replaced him?
He was very angry.
Really?
Yeah. He thought I conspired, which is the furthest thing from the truth. But the next time I saw Clive, funny enough, was at my very first drum clinic I did for Paiste, which was in 1986. So it's about 4 years after I joined the band, for almost 5 years. And I was at a drum show with John Eisman, Simon Kirk, me, John Keeble from Spandau Ballet, right? We did this big Paiste cymbal clinic. It was my first clinic. And actually, Clive was in the audience. When we'd finished, he was, hanging around afterwards as we were kind of having a drink together. And I went up to Clive and said, "How you doing?" And he looked at me and he went, "Yeah, I'm all right." And we didn't break that ice. It kind of was pretty weird until he got sick.
Mm-hmm.
And then tragedy took over, didn't it? You know, we lost him to MS. But the next time I really saw him was when we did our first charity event for him. And then he was okay with me then.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of lost a friend through it.
Wow.
Well, I didn't kind of. I did. I lost a dear friend through it.
Yeah.
And I guess that was one of the things that he really couldn't let go of, which was a shame.
Yeah, absolutely. Who were the guys, who were the two or three drummers for you growing up listening to that shaped your playing? I mean, I know you've probably talked about this before, but as far as from rock players.
From rock players, well, it's that's a very easy answer. First guy was Ringo Starr.
Yeah.
Who was really made an impression on me. And then it was Charlie Watts. And this is the order.
And this is interesting because here you are, a guy that has a huge kit and plays in this real big, loud metal band.
Oh, please.
And your guys are guys that played very basic, small kit.
Okay, so then I went to you're right. I always played a five-piece drum set until I joined Pat Travers. And then that's when the big kit came in. But anyway, that's another story. But it was Ringo, Charlie, Keith Moon,
Oh, okay, now you're getting a little busier.
My generation was less like, I was like, well, you know, it's, you know, I thought, where's this guy? I mean, the way he used to spin his stick around and just, you know, it was one of a kind. There's not been another drummer like it ever, in my opinion. And then from there, then the wonderful, great John Bonham.
Mm-hmm.
So those four guys shaped my playing.
Yeah.
I kicked off originally watching Joe Morella do a drum solo in Dave Brubeck with Take Five. That's what kicked me into this drum thing. But those four guys were the guys that were my stable of my heroes, if you like.
Did you get to see them all play live?
No, I never saw John play. Keith, I did. Keith actually kicked me out of the dressing room in 1974 when they did the Who Put the Boot In gig. So I actually got ejected.
Why?
Because I insulted Daughtry.
Because you what?
I insulted Roger.
You insulted Daughtry in front of Keith Moon and he kicked you out?
And he grabbed hold of me from the back of the scruff of the neck and he kicked me out of the dressing room.
What did you say? Do you remember what you said?
I said, he's a miserable MF.
You can say it on
He's
here.
He's a miserable motherfucker.
Yeah.
And Roger turned around and Mooney said, you don't talk about our Roger like that. Out with you. And he fucking grabbed me at the back of the neck and threw me out of the dressing room.
Wow.
And we were at Charlton Athletic Football Ground, 1974.
Wow, that's amazing.
I was playing in a band called Streetwalkers. And we were on the bill. In fact, the same bill was Little Feet did the were on the bill. And it was their very first London appearance or British date.
That's pretty cool to
and
say
Lau,
that.
Lau George got bottled, and somebody threw a bottle at him, cut his head off.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it was brutal. It was three shows. That it was called Who Put the Boot In, right? Because these were outdoor events in football, excuse me, soccer stadiums
right.
in England. One in London, one in Cardiff, and one in Glasgow.
I'm just thinking, going back to thinking how cool it is to be able to say that Keith Moon threw
exactly.
you out of a dressing room.
Oh, mate, yeah. So,
do you talk to Daughtry now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're really
goof
good
about
mates.
That? Does
yeah,
it ever
yeah.
come up?
There's a side story to it. We did, Steve and I did a thing for John McEnroe and Pat Cash called Full Metal Rackets. I don't know if you remember it. I think it was for the Armenian kids. I'm not sure. It was something like, one of those
I just
situations.
Met McEnroe actually recently for the yeah. first time. He was with Lars at the Metallica show a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
When Lars came back into the room, John McEnroe was with him. Yeah, yeah. I met him.
John's a great guy. Yeah. And because, you know, he loves his guitar playing, and so did Pat Cash. So Steve and I did Zeppelin's cover of Rock and Roll. And we did a gig. Oh, gosh, it was terrible. We did a gig at the old Limelight in London on Shaftesbury Avenue. It's not there now. It's gone. And we were on stage. Anyway, we did Steve and I did like two or three songs, and Steve turned around. McEnroe was out of his noggin. Oh, he was all over the shop. He's running all over. He's drumming. He fell into the drum set. And Steve's going, I've had enough of this. Let's fuck off. I said, all right, mate. So we asked anyone in the audience if they wanted to come and finish the gig. Right. So we go upstairs in a bar. And Roger, up... Since I first saw him in the 73, and I've met him a few times over the years, and he always seemed a little bit offish with me. And sometimes he'd say hello to me, and sometimes he wouldn't. So I pulled him aside, and I went out in the exit at the back of the, you know, like the fire exit next to the bar. And I said, Roger, I need a word. Come on outside. I want to have a word with you in private. And I said, you fucking pissed off with me or something. Well, what do you mean? I said, well, every time I've seen you since that time at the Who Put the Boot In, I said... You've kind of dissed me. You know, what's all that about? He said, well, what happened at the Charlton gig? I said, well, I insulted you. I said you were a miserable bastard, you know, fucking whatever. And Mooney slung me out. I said, you still pissed off at me? He said, well, I was pissed off with you. I'd have decked you. So I said, so you're not pissed off with me? He says, no, I'm just a miserable old fucker. And that was it. So then... After that, every time we've seen one, we're great mates now. Yeah.
So you saw Charlie Watts, who, of course, is still active yep. with the Stones, still yep. playing. You saw the Beatles?
I saw the Beatles when I was 12 years old. I saw them at what turned into the Rainbow, Finsbury Park. I saw them it was like everyone, Cilla Black, Billy J. Kramer, Freddie and the Dreamers, Jerry and the Pacemakers. I think they all did one song each.
What year was this?
Ooh, 1974. 1964, sorry. 60,
wow.
Yeah.
So that was your only time seeing the Beatles?
Oh, yeah. And I couldn't hear them. And you know what? The lasting memory was all I could smell was piss, because all the girls were pissing themselves.
Oh my!
And this is no word of a lie. You could look on the floor and you see wee. The girls were just it was nuts. You know,
wow.
And 'cause these days, you know, they didn't have like massive PA systems. You know,
right.
They were sort of things that were just beginning to come into their own in the 60s, you know. And
well, even that Shea Stadium footage, you can't hear anything but screaming.
They had a skinny speaker cabinets.
Yeah, you're in the middle of the outfield and there's a little column of speakers and 70,000 people screaming.
What did he say? I don't know. But, yeah, I saw them. So
You said you didn't see John Bonham play?
Never saw Zeppelin play live.
How did that happen?
Don't know, mate. Don't know. Unbelievable, isn't it?
That is amazing.
I got drunk with them all at the Roxy in LA back in the 70s. I think it was about 76, 70. It was before I was with Streetwalkers, and we played the Starlight Club, and they were in town, and we were on the same flight the next day going back to London. And I went with the band to the Roxy, and Zepp were in there, and they had Dr. Feelgood were playing. And they were all big fans of the band. So
there's a band called Dr. Feelgood.
You didn't know that?
No.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I only knew the Motley Crue.
That's where they got the song title from. No, Dr. Feelgood. They were playing, and we went up, and I got drunk with John and Robert and the
probably
guys.
Probably stumbled across to the Rainbow and went up in the annex there. And some shenanigans.
What? Up to where? I never got to see him play live. That was one of the...
Wow.
You know, I was so sad that I never saw
them. Yeah, I never saw them with John Bonham either. There was, of course, the O2 show. Did you go to the O2 show
years ago? No, I was back over in the States. Right. I wanted to go, and for love nor money, I mean, he's like, give us a ticket. I'll pay for it, whatever, you know.
Right.
And it was just nuts.
Yeah.
It was nuts.
Yeah.
I'd love to have gone to see that as well.
Some people have been waiting for a long time here. Let's get John in New York on. Go ahead, John. You're on with Nico. Hey, John. Your radio's turned up.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, John. Speak up. What's your question, bud?
My question was, what's Nico's favorite song to listen to from Iron Maiden?
His all-time favorite Iron Maiden song?
Just to listen to,
because
Ace is High is mine.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, Where Eagles Dare, mate.
Where Eagles Dare is his pick. Where Eagles Dare.
Oh, yeah, that's freaking awesome. I knew you were going to play that drum intro, too, when you said it.
It's good, isn't it?
I can find him some good pizza. I've lived in New York my whole life.
He's got a gig to worry about tonight, but maybe afterwards you can give him a suggestion for some pizza.
I don't eat pizza anymore, mate. I'm watching the waistline, see?
844-686-5863. Thank you, John, for the call. Much appreciated. Carl in California. Go ahead, Carl.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, man.
I want to know, I was at the Big Four. It was the first time I ever saw you guys. Did you stay and watch all the shows, or did you guys leave right away? Because that was an amazing concert.
First of all, I don't remember doing a Big Four.
The Big Four? You're talking about Iron Man? What are you talking about exactly, Carl?
I don't know. I've been drinking all day.
You started early, mate. You're 3 hours behind us, aren't you?
Carl, you got the wrong...
You dialed the wrong program, mate.
You may want to take a cue from what Nico did a couple years ago if you're calling a wrong radio show about
drinking.
A wrong band. Go back and listen when you sober up to what we talked about in the first hour, and it may be a good omen.
Enjoy yourself, mate. Carry on.
In New Hampshire. Go ahead, Tim.
Eddie, Nico, Eddie, how are you?
Hey, we're great, man.
We're doing good, Tim. Thanks.
I just wanted to say hi. I'm a big fan of Iron Maiden since I was a little kid. Also a big fan of that metal show. Sorry that it's gone.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm.
So is my bank account. So is my mortgage payment.
The missus can't go out shopping like she used to.
Stay off Amazon.
So how are you doing, Tim? What's your question, mate?
I just wanted to know if you guys, did you have a favorite band that you toured with over the years?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm sure the rest of the guys have.
Coney Hatch, the night they got drunk.
Coney Hatch, yeah, they were great.
Coney Hatch was a great band. They should have made it. Unfortunately, they didn't. I just had dinner with Andy in Canada a month or so ago. Yeah, he works for Rush now. Rush.
Yeah,
for years.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, I enjoyed Fastway actually when I came out in the early days.
Tour.
Yeah. Well, that was good fun. There's been many over the years, but I think probably Coney Hatch and Fastway were really good fun.
Great bands.
Oh,
absolutely.
That's awesome.
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate the phone call. And this is Jamie, who is listening in Florida. Hi, Jamie. You're on with Nico.
Hey, man. How's it going? Nice to talk to you, Nico.
Hi, Jamie.
I just wanted to say thank you for Rock and Roll Ribs, man. One of the best barbecue rib joints I've been in a long time down there in Coral Springs.
Oh, yeah. You're due a free meal when I see you.
Is this Mitch Tan calling? Is this Mitch calling his Jamie?
I'll give you that $20 when I see you.
Thank
you so very much, mate. It's lovely to hear people enjoying our food and come in and see us. Thank you.
Well done. Well, I love the atmosphere too, man. I love all the memorabilia on the walls.
That's nice, mate.
Thanks
that's what
much,
it's there
man.
For. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie. Nick, have you ever thought of opening a second one or franchising it out? Is it something you ever thought about?
Yeah, Mitch and I have been talking to some people. Well, Mitch more than I because I've been away, but there's a guy, a friend of ours, that's thinking of taking a franchise. Mitch and I have actually talked about finding a different location and opening a second one, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe more Rock and Roll Ribs coming across the country. We'll see.
Do you?
Cramming in a few calls here before we have to wrap up in a few minutes with Nico McBrain and wrap up on Trunk Nation for a Wednesday. Johnny in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Johnny.
Hey, Nico. Great to talk to you, man.
Hi, Johnny.
I'm a big fan of Maiden since the beginning, and 1982 came, and, you know, I'm 14 years old, and I just got to see them open for Priest, and, you know, we get Kerrang! Magazine toward the end of the year, and it reads, you know, Clive Burr out of Maiden, so... You know, we're all 14, 15-year-old boys shitting our pants at our favorite band, you know, like, what's happening, you know? Because at that time, the third lineup changed. So a few months down the road, we hear about Peace of Mind coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And this was back before, you know, songs leaked and all that kind of stuff.
Yes. The good old days.
We just bought the record, went back to one of our houses, dropped the needle, and, you know, within a matter of 20 seconds after the drum intro and the intro of Where Eagles Dare, we just all had our jaws dropped.
Thank you. You knew it was going to be okay, right, Johnny?
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. We all looked at each other without even saying it. We're like, we're going to be okay.
Nice.
So, and I, you know, I saw you on all those tours, World Peace, Slavery Tour, and I just wanted to mention one other thing. I always really loved the humor of the band.
Mm-hmm.
Mission from Aria is one of my favorites.
Ah, yes, sir.
Thank you, Johnny. Appreciate the phone call. I only have about 2 minutes left,
okay.
but what? Where was your very, very first show with Iron Maiden? You must remember it. The very first show.
I'm thinking it was at Ipswich Gaumont on the Peace of Mind tour.
Is that Scotland?
No, it's Ipswich. It's near Norwich.
Oh, okay. Do you remember anything? Was there anything that stood out from you about it? It wasn't good?
No, I mean, it was like, you know, nerves.
Nerves.
Doing Where Eagles Dare opening. I'm like, you know. I think it was the Ipswich Gaumont. I may be wrong, but that's sticking in my mind. And, I remember when Steve said, right, we're going to open, we rehearsed the set, and he said, we're going to. And I wanted to warm up a bit before I had that big drum intro to do. You know? In fact, I didn't really want to do it, to be honest with you, because it's a bloody hard song to play as well. It's not as hard as Power Slave, but...
I saw you at NAMM a number of years ago, and you were doing a booth, and the first thing I came up to you, I get a big hug, and I go, do Eagles Dare, because you were showcasing a new snare at the time.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I said, play, and you played it for me a little bit at NAMM.
It was, I'm pretty sure that's where it was. I may be wrong, but that's the memory I have.
Did you get a lot of rehearsal time in? Did you get to spend a lot of time getting the set?
God, I don't remember, man. It's 30-odd years. It's half a lifetime ago.
But it's the first show. That's a big thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We did rehearse. Yeah.
Yep. Well, listen, man, I would grab some more calls, but we have to go. So let me remind everybody, the latest Iron Maiden album is The Book of Souls. It's out there right now. Maiden are playing, contrary to reports you may have heard, in Newark, New Jersey at the Prudential Center tonight. And then they go from there across the country, wrapping up their entire tour in Brooklyn with two shows at the Barclays Center at the end of July. Well, huge thanks to Nico McBrain of Iron Maiden. I'm so glad he was able to stay with us for the entire show. So much fun to talk to Nico. Always a lot of great stories and just a blast. So I know you guys enjoyed that. Much appreciated. See Iron Maiden out there currently on tour in the U.S. if you can get a ticket to their current Book of Souls tour. Thanks to Katie Irizarry. She's the producer of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. As usual, connect with me on Twitter, where I'm probably most active, at Eddie Trunk, Instagram, Facebook, at Eddie Trunk, and eddietrunk.com is the official online home. My blog is up there. You can also get music news updated daily by Dana, all the stuff you care about. Email me through the website, merch store, check it out, t-shirts and a lot more, and also hit the books tab for signed copies directly from me of either of my books. You guys have a great week. See you next Thursday for another all-new episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. And again, thanks to Nico McBrain and the Iron Maiden Camp for making this happen, and that great interview we just heard with Nico McBrain. See you guys next week. Thanks.
You can listen to my show, Off the Vine, with Caitlin Bristow every Tuesday on Podcast One. Hear me take on taboo topics and unfiltered advice. I'll also be dishing with some amazing celebrities. Oh, and did I mention there'll be wine? So grab a glass and join me every Tuesday on PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.